You are listening to Particular Pilgrims, Stories from Reformed Baptist History with Commentary. I'm your host, Ron Miller, pastor of Covenant Baptist Church of Clarksville, Tennessee, and a longtime student and collector of Particular Baptist History. We are on the Man of God Network, brought to you by Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary. It strikes me as unlikely that a born poor, persecuted Baptist boy like Isaiah Burt would one day grow up to be friends with a wealthy, high society, evangelical Anglican named John Broadley Wilson. But that is, in fact, what happened. At the same time, the story of their friendship illustrates the complementary truth that members of particular Baptist churches were often a tight-knit and even intermarried community. In John Burt's memoir of his father, he mentions that about the year 1803, he, quote, formed a friendship which became an era in his life and shed a happy influence over its whole remainder. For the next 30 years, John Broadley Wilson, Esquire, would be a close and valued friend. Indeed, at Wilson's death, Burt called him, quote, the best friend I have ever found on earth. Wilson was born in 1764 in Tamworth, near Birmingham, the son of Francis Wilson. His was a wealthy family with the benefits of important friends and high connections. John was appointed to a government position in Devonport, which gave him what John Burt called, quote, brilliant prospects of worldly advancement. But at this point, he was soundly converted under the preaching of Rowland Hill, the very gifted Calvinistic Methodist preacher who had built his own tabernacle in Surrey. At some point after this, Wilson was told about Isaiah Burt and that he was an Arian. Wilson went to hear Burt preach, but, quote, instead of finding him an Arian, his sentiments and preaching were so much to Mr. Wilson's taste that he became a regular hearer. Wilson's own beliefs were described as, quote, decidedly Calvinistic, of the best school. He warmly contended for gospel grace, obligation, and duty. This is a polite way of saying that Wilson was not a hyper-Calvinist. Burt goes on to say, he was eminently a spiritually minded and devotional Christian who felt that a Christian is not his own. And so he, that is Wilson, kept nothing back from his Lord. Their friendship grew, and over time, Wilson became convinced of believers' baptism. So Burt immersed Wilson. But Wilson hadn't changed his mind about church government, and so he continued his membership in the Church of England. He regularly attended St. Paul's Church in Clapham, London, and there is still today, in that church building, a sculpted memorial to him and to his charitable acts. One of his homes, a mansion on 11 acres with a road shared with William Wilberforce, was in Clapham, and was the place of his ordinary residence. John Burt says that when Wilson was converted, business lost its charms. So he left public service and retired to his home in Clapham. Here he became an important member of what is famously known as the Clapham sect. This isn't an odd form of religion. Rather, it was a group of mostly evangelical Anglican social reformers. They were preeminently abolitionists, but they also worked for change in other areas, such as the reform of prisons, and for all kinds of political and civil rights. All of this was rooted in their Christian faith, and in Wilson's day was led by William Wilberforce. While John Broadley Wilson was not the most public of their many famous members, he was one of the most giving. In fact, he seems to have made it a goal to give away his large fortune received upon his father's death in 1814 to a wide variety of Christian missions and social causes. It is said he was a member of 36 philanthropic societies. Ford Brown, referring to Wilson, says, quote, "This man probably made heavier contributions and subscriptions to moral and reforming societies of the day than any other person, with the possible exception of Wilberforce." One of these causes was the Baptist Missionary Society, and he gave both his money and his time. He was its treasurer from 1826 until 1834, the year before his death. One of his private acts of charity was to provide for Isaiah Burt as he became infirm and could no longer preach and therefore support himself. Burt did manage to outlive Wilson by a few years, and the kindness was continued by his widow, Lydia. Let's now turn to her life. She was born Lydia Gwenap, G-W-E-N-N-A-P, in 1772 to John and Grace Gwenap, who lived in Falmouth, Cornwall, in the far southwest of England. Her parents were founding members of Emmanuel Baptist Church, which began in 1663, but was reconstituted in 1769. The church remains a Baptist witness even to this day. John's great uncle was none other than Andrew Gifford of London, who had come down to baptize Grace as part of the church reconstitution. And John's uncle, Joseph Gwenap, was also a well-known Baptist minister. The family seems to have had some financial resources, and Lydia received a good education. She was an only child and possibly cared for her aging father until he died in 1806. Her mother seems to have died earlier. Lydia professed faith and was baptized in a little tiny village north of Plymouth on November 2nd, 1793, age 21. Isaiah Burt may have been the administrator, as he regularly preached and baptized throughout Devon and Cornwall during this time. The year her father died, she married John Broadley Wilson in Plymouth. Her uncle Joseph, the Baptist minister, officiated the service. Lydia was 34, John was 42. It was a first marriage for both. It's not known how they met, but it may have been through Isaiah Burt or even Andrew Gifford. The number of their family and friend connections in particular Baptist circles are many. They had no children. Instead, they worked as a wealthy Christian couple to serve their Savior by dispensing the equivalent of millions of dollars to needy persons and sound causes. Lydia outlived her husband by 20 years and continued to give generously, including to the Baptist Missionary Society, until she fell asleep in Jesus on April 13, 1854, aged 82. Earlier, I said there are indications that the Gwenaps lived comfortably. One evidence of this is that Lydia had her portrait painted when she was about 13. It was done by a young John Opie, who would become one of England's best portrait painters of the period. The painting was discovered just a few years ago, rediscovered really, and restored. You can see pictures of it online, as well as several portraits of John Broadley Wilson, Joseph Gwenap, and Roland Hill. Now, this story illustrates a number of things. Not every Baptist family was poor and low in society. We now know part of the story of Lydia and even what she looked like as a child, a fairly rare case. Despite the challenges of being a dissenter in England, upward mobility of a certain kind was possible. Much of this revolved around connections with preachers who were often esteemed during this age of evangelical preaching. And here is yet another example of the preachers of the evangelical revival being the means of saving some who would play important roles in particular Baptist life. And these Baptists were not high Calvinists, but thoroughly gospel-oriented, with a proper broadness of appreciation for other true Christians with differing beliefs. Thank you for listening today. This is Ron the Baptist wishing you grace and peace.